All right. It is 1 o'clock. I will call the meeting to order. Carrie, will you please call the roll?
Chair McAdoo. Chair McAdoo.
Yes.
Present. Vice Chair Carter.
Present.
Regent Arascotta.
Here.
Regent Boylan.
Aye.
Regent Brooks.
Here.
Regent Carvalho.
Here.
Regent Del Carlo. Regent Dubrava. Regent Geddes. Regent Geddes.
Here, here, here.
Regent McMichael.
Here.
Regent Moran.
Yes, ma'am.
Regent Perkins. Regent Tarkanian. You have a quorum present.
Thank you. And those who are able, please stand. And Regent Arascotta will be leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you, Regent Arascotta. And I would like to start the meeting with a land acknowledgement. So we take a moment to recognize that here in Nevada, we stand or sit on the land of the Washishu, Washoe, Numu, Northern Paiute, Nui, Western Shoshone, and Nuwu, Southern Paiute. We take a moment to recognize and honor their stewardship that continues into today. With this recognition, we state an intention to rightfully include their voice and respect them as the 27 sovereign tribal nations of Nevada. Thank you. And I would like to move us to public comment, agenda item number one. Is there any public comment in Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas?
No public comment, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Reno? If you have public comment, please come to the podium, identify yourself, spelling your last name, and you will have 2 minutes in which to comment, and you will see that on the clock. Thank you. You can push the button to turn your mic on, please. Thank you.
There you go. Okay. Hello. My name is Gloria Charlene, S-H-A-R-L-E-I-N. I'm a mathematician and UNR faculty. My comments are my own. I want to start off with God bless America, where we have the freedom to openly have these discussions. This is my third public comment given to you about my vaccine injury. COVID vaccines are ineffective, unethical, and most importantly, unsafe. During the Omicron surge, we were all mass vaccinated and some boosted, yet we saw the wave of COVID through the campus. Some faculty expressed their booster family was also in the hospital. Much has been learned since then. On January 24th this year, I watched live COVID A Second Opinion with Senator Ron Johnson. After being ignored by local doctors and disregarded of my injury, I reached out to a doctor who presented at our nation's capital, and I expressed, I have been injured, cannot get care, please help me. Pursuant to the frontline COVID-19 critical care lines, I was prescribed ivermectin and 2 other naturally compounded medications. And with 1 day, I stopped having heart palpitations. And within 5 weeks, most of my ovarian side effects have stopped. Spike protein and genetic modifying mRNA are dangerous and attacking the heart, ovaries, liver, DNA, brain, and other parts of the body. There is an obvious conflict of interest regarding the CDC's mandated COVID vaccine. The CDC holds several patents related to the COVID vaccine. Therefore, it is in their interest to drive sales by pushing vaccine on every conceivable level. It is important to note that Pfizer attempted to conceal 9 pages of the COVID vaccine side effects for 75 years, and thankfully, a court barred them from doing so. It's unethical and unwise to make policies and not look at all studies. Situations like these deserve our full attention and should be analyzed from every angle. Look at publications and talk to Dr. Robert Malone, original inventor of mRNA, and Dr. Peter McCullough and Dr. Pierre Corey, who are being silenced for not fitting the narrative. Inclusion, I believe, is the act of including and not dividing. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment here in Reno? Seeing no other public comment, we will move to agenda item number 2. And that will be, I will actually welcome Regent J.T. Moran. I believe you're attending virtually today, Regent Moran. And if so,
Madam
will you
Chair.
Please? Yes. Yes, sir. Regent Boylan?
I don't know if this is the right time to say it. Excuse me, Regent Moran. But I do believe we had some written comment by Dr. Cosgrove. Why was that not read out?
The written comments are submitted to us as regents. We no longer read the written comments in the meetings.
Okay, because I'd like to say that what she wrote was very appropriate to what's happened with this search and the search that we are doing for our council. So I would like to also mention that I agree with her, and I do believe that the search was not proper. There were too many things that just didn't fit in there, and I'm just curious if this is the right time for me to speak up about this, but I was surprised that we don't read public comment, especially after what happened yesterday. And we had ex-Regent Levitt, who expressed his belief and sent us a letter. I don't believe we should be ignoring everything that has been said and done, and how this whole search from the beginning, 3 times, 4 times, this is another big black eye to this board. And I don't want that to happen. So I really would appreciate your advice or anybody else's. How do we go about doing this? Can there be an investigation by, I don't know, our council, by somebody else? I'm finding this really difficult to swallow. This whole event is beyond flabbergasting to me. And I've had people yesterday even ask, who were not at the meeting, why was this meeting not on the internet?
And Regent Boylan,
sorry, go ahead. Someone, yeah, no, please tell me.
I apologize. I don't mean to interrupt. Yes. This is System Council.
No, thank you. That's what I was asking. Yeah.
I just wanted to interrupt. This is the time for public comment. So I think right now it's more appropriate to let the public comment. And then if there's anything that you would like to request, do it on new business at the end of the meeting.
Okay, thank you so much. But that's why it's public comment that was just ignored. That's why I asked that. I'm like, I need advice from you, Mr. Martinez. See, I got your name right this time, because even though I like Jimmy, but Mr. Martinez, that's why I needed that. So in new business, you said we should talk about that? Is that what you said?
Yes, if there was any request to look into anything, that would be more appropriately done under new business. And then staff can look into it and take those under advisement.
I do appreciate that, and we will talk about it in new business. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Regent Boylan, and thank you, Mr. Martinez.
Sorry. Thank you, ma'am. Sorry, Mr. Regent Moran. Sorry about that, sir.
So, Regent Moran, we will now move to agenda item number 2 for you to discuss the Chief of Staff and Special Counsel to the Board of Regents Ad Hoc Committee.
Thank you very much.
I can hear you.
Madam Chair. No, I appreciate it. And thank you for allowing me to participate electronically. Yes, quick update on item number 2 on our agenda today. I am pleased to announce that the ad hoc committee interviewed three highly qualified candidates yesterday for the position of Chief of Staff and Special Counsel to the Board of Regents. The ad hoc committee unanimously selected one of those three individuals, those applicants. The applicant that was submitted and was asked to be forwarded along was Mr. Kilroy. Mr. Kilroy was unanimously selected by the ad hoc committee to be forwarded along and presented to the full board for consideration today. Madam Chair, I will defer to you on motion making, but if there is no comment at this point in time and no further discussion, Madam Chair, I am prepared to make a motion that is consistent and in line with, number one, the procedural posturing of this particular committee and it following the delegations made by the full board, and number two, substantively, what we considered and of course, what the board ultimately, in terms of recommendation, the ad hoc committee's recommendation to the full board today would be in line with. So with that, Madam Chair, I will stand at ease until you suggest otherwise, and I am prepared to make a motion. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Regent Moran. I will take your motion and a second if there is one, and then we can have the discussion.
Second.
So yes, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Yes, please. Madam Chair, thank you again. This is Regent Moran for the record. I would make a recommendation and a motion to appoint Mr. Robert G. Kilroy to the position of Chief of Staff and Special Counsel for the Board of Regents, Madam Chair, and I would also move to appoint Mr. Kilroy consistent with the offer that was outlined in the supplemental materials. Madam Chair, that is the gist of my motion, and I appreciate your time and also appreciate your stewardship on this particular item.
Thank you, Regent Moran. Do I have a second to the motion?
Second.
Ms. Regent McMichael, I believe that was you that seconded the motion.
Yes.
Okay. I will open the agenda item number two up to to discussion, and the discussion will simply be on the motion. Again, I will just repeat that Regent Boylan, your topic will be in recorded in new business, but if you have any, I saw you raise your hand, so if yes, you have a conversation about this specific item with Mr. Kilroy, I welcome your comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Much appreciated. And I really do appreciate everyone's patience. But I think Mr. Kilroy is very highly qualified, and so were the other two candidates. I'm very impressed. And it has nothing to do with Mr. Kilroy or with anything else. But I will not vote on this motion, because I do not believe, again, I'll say it, that it did not go properly, and I will not vote on this, even though I'm supposed to. So what is the procedure, either you or Mr. Geddes? If I don't vote, what happens and what do I do?
Mr. Martinez will tell you your options.
Yes, okay? Sir. Thank you.
Uh-huh. Thanks.
Again, Jimmy Martinez for the record. Under NRS, you do have a duty to vote on matters that come before the board. The only times when you would not vote is if you were abstaining and disclosing on the record, or if you were absent. I can't tell you what to do in this matter, but I would just advise you that those are the allegations of every region.
Thank you, sir. Then I will abstain based on the fact that I do not think this is ethical, and I will not vote on anything that is ethical. So it is no one person's fault, and this has gone on for so long. And if there is something that anyone wants to do against me, because I will not vote on something ethical, I do not follow any commands that are unethical, and I think I will not vote on this no matter what. And I appreciate your advice, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Is there any further discussion on agenda item number 2 for the appointment of the Chief of Staff and Special Counsel for the Board of Regents?
Madam Chair.
Yes, Regent Moran.
Yes, sorry to interrupt. The only additional comment that I wanted to make, Madam Chair, was I don't know if you're going to point out the two key pieces in terms of the contract, number one being the salary and number two being the length of time of the employment engagement. Is that something that you will detail after this particular item, or are we approving that obviously consistent and compatible and harmonious with the letter that was made as a part of my motion in our supplemental materials?
It was part of your motion, and each regent received that supplemental material. We could certainly cover that if you want to do it. You're welcome to. You were the ad hoc chair. Or if you want me to do that, I can do it.
That's okay, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make sure that I'm certain that all of the regents have received the supplemental materials. They were obviously in the public record. And they were available to the public as soon as they were available to us. I believe that the salary, I don't have it in front of me, is $208,935. Is that correct, Madam Chair?
It's $208,942.
Thank you,
and
Madam Chair.
That is based on the salary fee schedule.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And also, I just want to make certain that it's a 12-month time frame, just so that the whole world knows that that's the period of time that we're looking at with regards to this engagement.
Well, yes, this letter is for that year, and then there would be an evaluation. I believe that the hope for the board, should this be approved, would be that his contract would be renewed after that annual evaluation or periodic.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's the way I understand it as well.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Madam Chair.
Are there any other? I'm so sorry. I can't tell who's speaking, but.
That's okay. Chair McAdoo, it's for the record, it's Regent Brooks. I just wanted to clarify.
Oh, yes.
I just wanted to clarify when we're talking about when we're using that word contract, that may be a little bit different than what perhaps we've seen in other employments through various personnel, and that we're calling this a contract, but essentially it seems like it's more of a term of service, where the term of service is outlined for 12 months, opposed to what we'd really be looking at on other hires, where there are pages that outline task, performance evaluations, and anything pertaining to the job itself. So I think just for clarification purposes, I just want to make sure that we're on the right, everybody's on the right page. In term of the word contract, this is more of an agreement. Would that be a fair assessment, Chair McAdoo?
I'm going to ask Mr. Martinez to address that, please. Thank you.
Again, Jimmy Martinez for the record. So this position is a little bit different than, or it's a lot different than the position of chancellor and presidents that we would normally see a contract come forward for. This is what our code and handbook refer to as an A contract position, a standard faculty 12-month position. And what that means is there is a contract of employment, but the main terms of the contract are outlined in the ENSHE code, so Title II of the code. If you have if there's anything in a hire that is going to go outside of the code, you actually need an addendum to the contract, because any contract of employment or offer letter, in this case like this, it is a contract. But it encompasses the code in that contract. So all of the employment terms are within the code. I hope that answers the question.
Regent Brooks, for the record, it answered my question. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Martinez. Are there any other questions or discussion points on agenda item number 2? Hearing none, I will I'm sorry, Mr. Martinez.
Yes, and again, for the record, Interim General Counsel Jimmy Martinez, I just wanted to put just one thing on the record prior to the actual vote, just so that everybody is clear as to the Attorney General's position in terms of voting. So the open meeting law manual that's published by the Attorney General's office has the following paragraph in it. And it reads, the legislature encourages appointed or elected members of public bodies to vote, not abstain. NRS 281A 420 subsection 4B states, quote, because abstention by a public officer disrupts the normal course of representative government and deprives the public and the public officer's constituents of a voice in governmental affairs, the provisions of NRS 281A 420 are intended to require abstention only in clear cases where the independence of judgment of a reasonable person in the public officer's situation would be materially affected by the public officer's acceptance of a gift or loan, significant pecuniary interest, or commitment in a private capacity to the interest of another person, end quote. So I would like to put out there that, of course, in the event that any regent feels that their situation in that context would be permissible for an abstention and appropriate, that would be abstention would be appropriate. Otherwise, a no vote would be more appropriate.
Thank you for the explanation. Yes, Regent Boylan.
Thank you so much, ma'am. And this is this is to Council Martinez. So the NRS, etc., whatever, it states that if you're absent or you have some, you know, something to do, I don't know, pecuniary or interest or something. So how about this? If I make myself absent for this vote, like several people have done, and like they do, I'll get out of this meeting, sure, and I will, and I'll be back in 15 minutes, and I'm absent. Is that illegal and immoral, sir?
I would say that's more akin to circumvention of the statute. I personally would never recommend somebody to do that. What I would recommend is either a vote of yes or no on the item. But again, that's my advice, and the decision has to be made by each individual region.
I see. Thank you so much, sir.
Okay.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome. Thank you. Certainly. All right, Carrie, I will call for a roll call vote, please.
Regent Del Carlo. Regent Dubrava.
Yes.
Regent Geddes.
Aye.
Chair McAdoo.
Yes.
Regent McMichael.
Yes.
Regent Moran.
Yes, ma'am.
Regent Perkins.
Yes.
Regent Tarkanian?
Yes.
Regent Arascata?
Yes.
Regent Boylan?
Nay.
Regent Brooks?
Yes.
Vice Chair Carter?
Yes.
Regent Carvalho?
Aye.
The motion passes.
Thank you for that. I believe that Mr. Kilroy is in the Las Vegas office. Is that correct, Carrie?
That is correct.
I would like to call him to the podium if he would like to make a comment or a brief remarks. And congratulations and welcome to the team, Mr. Kilroy. We appreciate it.
Is this on? Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Thank you.
I would like to express my gratitude, first of all, to the staff that had the duty to put forth all the applications as they came in, calling out Ms. Olson. She was diligent in her efforts and duties, and I appreciate that. I'm sure the other applicants as well. With regard to the ad hoc committee members, I would extend my appreciation for all the time you spent in reviewing all three of the applicants, and furthermore, all the other applicants that were not fortunate enough to have an opportunity to present and say why they're the best person moving forward. And then lastly, in front of the Board of Regents, I would like to express, again, my appreciation for you for having trust in the committee process. And just want to let you all know, I'm all for the staff as their chief, and as your special counsel, I am all for the Board of Regents. You can expect me to come to work each and every day looking to build a stronger team so we can provide the Board of Regents to be the most effective Board of Regents yet to come to pass. One of my heroes is John Mackey, so I'm just delighted to be able to work further in his legacy and empower this Board of Regents to make our system the jewel of the West, where everybody wants to come and be educated. So with that, I thank you.
Thank you, and again, welcome. And again, thank you for your service as a veteran of the United States Navy.
Thank you very much.
All right. We will move on to agenda item number 3. And I believe, Mr. Redding, are you presenting? Thank you.
Good afternoon. For the record, Vic Redding, Vice President of Administration and Finance at the University of Nevada, Reno. One of the many, many transitional details in onboarding the UNR at Lake Tahoe facility was ensuring stability and affordability in the residence hall and food services available to on-campus students. After looking at other options and vendors, I'm happy to report that the executive transition team has negotiated a continuation of the existing food service contract with Sodexo at current existing student rates for the next academic year. And while there was a slight inflationary increase in the Sodexo master facilities contract for the entire campus in fiscal 23, where we were able to keep the residence hall pricing to the students flat as well. This provides the continuity of service levels and pricing that were priorities of the campus community and are an important piece of stability in one of the most visible aspects of campus operations. As this coming fall, those fees will be collected for the first time by UNR. Today's item in front of you adds those sections to the procedures and guidelines manual. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Move approval.
Second.
Are there any questions, comments, or discussion with Mr. Redding?
Question.
Yes, please, Regent Arascata.
The resident and food service rates, how do they compare to the campus of UNR's main campus compared to the Lake Tahoe campus?
Regent Arascata, for the record, Vic Redding. They are slightly higher. That is a function of the smaller scale of that facility, as well as the premium that most activities in the Incline Village region demand. So we intend to keep this contract for stability purposes through this academic year 23. We will be looking very hard at other options if it's a potential to roll it into the master contract at UNR, if there's some of these things that should be brought into the university. But the direct answer to your questions is, while it's flat year over year, it is slightly higher in Incline Village.
Thank you. Still very attractive rates. Appreciate it.
Are there any other comments, questions, or discussion?
Chair McAdoo, this is Regent
yes.
Carvalho. I just had a question for Mr. Redding.
Yes, please. Go ahead.
Thank you. Regarding the meal plans, I'm not sure. Could you clarify what it means, a declining balance per year? I see for the silver plan, for example, it says $400 declining balance / year. Could you explain what that means, please?
Sure. Again, for the record, Vic Redding, and I'm happy to. I would like to clarify for the record that that section you're looking at applies to the existing rates at the UNR main campus and is not part of the change for the Lake Tahoe facility. But the direct answer to your question, as part of the meal plan, because there are several dining options on the main campus that are not part of the regular swipe plan, there's a credit that's available for students who purchase these meal plans that they can use at those alternate dining facilities.
Okay, thank you for that. I'm sorry I got confused on which was UNR's main campus and which was for Lake Tahoe. But thank you for that clarification.
No problem. Yeah, no problem at all. We would have something similar, but there is, given the scale at Lake Tahoe, there's only one dining facility on the campus, so having a credit wasn't an option we could provide.
Thank you for that. Are there any other questions, comments, or discussion? Seeing none, I will call for a voice vote, please. All those in favor, say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed, please say nay. Passes unanimously, and thank you. We will now move to agenda item number 4, and I see CFO Klinger at the podium to address agenda item 4. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Regents, for the record, Andrew Klinger, Chief Financial Officer. And what is before you today is a request to amend the Regents Handbook. And I bring this request to you on behalf of the business officers who over the last 18 months have spent a lot of time together working on this charter as well as goals for the group. And so what we are requesting of the board is to codify the business officer's charter in the handbook. And basically what the charter establishes is both the purpose for the Business Officers Council as well as the roles and responsibilities. And this is really the culmination of work from two things. One is the Workday Alignment Project that we started 2 years ago. Part of what generated this charter came out of that. Second is the Fiscal Sustainability Committee chaired by Regent Carter. And one of the recommendations in there was a governing group for shared services. And so you'll see in this charter that is actually codified in this charter that the Business Officers Council is the governing group for system-wide shared services. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, CFO Klinger. Are there any questions, comments, or discussions? All right.
I was trying to text, but I'm not fast enough.
Oh, okay. All right. Please go ahead, Vice Chair Carter.
I just wanted to say I do appreciate this. I know this took a little while from my standpoint to get there, but this was one of the recommendations to have a little more coordination and effort there, especially with SCS and some of the other things we looked at in the Sustainability Committee. So I appreciate Andrew and everyone's work on this. Thank you.
This is an action item, so I will entertain a motion, please.
Regent McMichael
made a motion. I'd also be willing to make a motion.
Regent McMichael made a motion to approve. Regent Boylan seconded. Any discussion?
Madam Chair, Regent Perkins here.
Yes, Regent Perkins.
I was wondering about this Officers' Council. Is there any deliverables? Is there any way to make sure that the council is still effective and doing what they're supposed to do?
I will let CFO Klinger answer that, please.
Sure. For the record, CFO Klinger, Madam Chair, Regent Perkins. So part of the reason actually for codifying this in the Regent's Handbook is exactly that, is to create accountability to make sure as a group we are accomplishing the things that are outlined within the charter. In addition to that, we as a council have established 5 goals, and there are various tasks associated with each one of those goals that at each of our meetings we'll be reviewing the progress on those 5 goals and the actions associated with those and the deliverables that come out of there. So there's not specific deliverables in the charter itself, other than the roles and responsibilities outlined there, but we have established goals and are holding ourselves accountable to those.
Thank you for that answer. That'd be an interesting report to hear later on.
Seeing no other questions, comments, or discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
I vote aye as well. Any in opposition, please say nay. It passes unanimously. Thank you. And CFO Klinger, we will move to agenda item number 5 for another handbook revision, please.
Thank you, Chair McAdoo and Regents. For the record, Andrew Klinger, CFO. Before you is another request for an amendment to the Regents handbook. And what this is a request that was a new business item requested by Regent Carvalho, I believe, at our last meeting. And what Regent Carvalho had requested was that we incorporate the business officers into the process that's outlined in the Regents handbook, so that it reflects the use of the business officers in making those recommendations on the capital improvement projects. So the changes you see there adds the business officers to the process that was already existing in code. The other piece of this that we're requesting is removal of language related to life cycle cost analysis, partly because we simply don't do that currently, and the institutions take on the obligation for the life cycle costs. And this is something we did discuss as business officers, and they all understand that they have that obligation to take that on. So two parts to this.
Regent Geddes, one moment. I believe Regent Carter's first in the queue, and you will be next. Thank you. Please go ahead, Regent Carter.
Thank you. And I know this part's not in part of the changes, but under C, it says institutional data to determine the need for space in the Regent's priority areas. What is the Regent's priority areas, and where does that come from or relate to?
For the record, CFO Klinger, so the space, that's part of the space report that we bring to the Regents every 2 years. So when we approve the CIP, we do a space analysis. Now, for this biennium, we had an abbreviated space analysis report simply because of the pandemic. Because that space report usually will identify the utilization of space. Now, obviously, in a pandemic, when students are remote, the utilization of space is very different. So it comes through that report. As far as the statement of Regents' priorities, we would use the Regents' 5 strategic goals really to drive how we look at that.
Does that answer your question, Vice Chair Carter?
Yes, I think so. I think maybe the Regents' goals or strategic plan, or there might be a better wording to that, but we can always come back to that later.
Okay, thank you. Regent Geddes, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess my objection with pulling out the life cycle cost analysis is, you know, this was put in the state law 20-plus years ago, and part of the problem was we would go out and get the lowest bid for a building, and we would end up with a cheap air conditioning system that we had to replace in 5 years or 10 years. So we had put in the requirements in state law that you needed a life cycle cost analysis so that you knew what it would cost to operate the building for 20 to 30 years. That ended up getting watered down, as you're well aware, to 1 year, which really isn't a life cycle cost analysis. But, I can support this today. I don't like that change, but if there's a way for you guys to, I know the CMAR process is a lot different. Most of our facilities are CMAR and not low bid right now. But if there's a way to make analysis and report on any new facilities or major retrofits where we can say with these systems, we expect it to last 20, 30 years. I know you and I did a big chiller loop project down here a few years ago that extended the life cycle of a lot of systems, but I'm the energy geek, and I just want to make sure that we're not looking at low cost, first cost, but most of our facilities are 30, 40, 70, 100 years old, and we need to think of that whenever we're doing things. So I don't know if there's a way to just do that in the report. I mean, I can support this today, but I just want to say that's why we put the language in, was to comply with state law and to look at our long-term costs. And as we've done in our CIP process, you know, we put deferred maintenance that we're so far behind in $1.2 billion, $1.3 billion at this point. And if we're putting in cheap systems, that just grows. So I just want to state that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Madam Chair, may I respond?
Yes, please.
Madam Chair, Klinger. For the record, CFO Klinger, and I appreciate you, Regent Geddes, for making those comments. And we are still bound, obviously, by the State Public Works Board policies and the rules that they establish for these sort of things. So perhaps what we can do is bring back another amendment to this and maybe incorporate some of that, the requirements from the State Public Works side, because we have to do that for our submission to them. So perhaps we can come back with a future change to this to, I think, to address your concerns, because I don't disagree.
That would be great.
All right. Sounds like a good solution. Solutions are good. All right. Are there any comments, questions, discussion? Okay. This is also an action item, so I will entertain a motion, please.
Regent McMichael, motion to approve.
Okay. McMichael and Regent Tarkanian, thank you. Any other further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
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 I vote aye as well. Are there any nays? If so, please say so. Hearing none, the motion passes. And I would like for our officer in charge, Crystal Abbott, to come to the mic to address agenda item number 6. And I believe Mr. Martinez is going to be of assistance. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Crystal Abbott, officer in charge, and I have with me today Interim General Counsel Jimmy Martinez. Before you, you have two items of reference material. One is a full repeal of the COVID vaccine requirements for employees, and the second is a resolution that asserts your position in regards to COVID vaccines in general. Just a little bit of history on this item. You will recall that on May 25th, we brought before this board two options, and that was specifically in regards to the COVID vaccine requirement because those provisions of the handbook indicated that this board would review this matter before the convening of the fall 22 semester. And with that, we brought you two general options. Number one, option A, was retaining the COVID vaccine requirements for all new employees, and in doing so, there was a removal of the requirement for vendors and contractors engaged with the system and other technical changes. In addition, was option B, which was the full repeal of the provisions of Title II, Chapter 12. I bring to you today option B, and I will explain why briefly. Keep in mind that this is a code change, and pursuant to your code, any code change, because it has the full force and effect of law, requires two hearings. So your first hearing for information only was May 25th, and today I will be asking you to take action. With that, I would like to briefly summarize the steps that General Counsel Martinez and I have taken since we met on May 25th. First of all, in having that discussion with the board, one statement that I heard over and over from the board was the importance of conveying to students, faculty, and staff the importance of vaccines for COVID, and much of that is addressed within the resolution. However, as we had a conversation with the presidents and with the board, it was clear that the one group that we had not gotten their opinion on through all of this was the human resource directors that were responsible for the implementation of the original policies. So the first step that Jimmy and I took was to meet with the directors of HR and present to them the two options and basically see where they were at. They were unanimously in support of option B, which was the full repeal. And it will be of no surprise to you that they experienced many implementation challenges. And as you are aware, there were 209 employees who were terminated under those provisions. We also spoke with them in regards to finding some type of middle ground that could go with the repeal. Again, where we're not asserting that we don't care about vaccine anymore. What we're saying is this is important, but there are ways that we can protect ourselves without having the COVID vaccine requirement in place, given where we are in the situation with the pandemic. And that's the resolution, and I'll talk about that in a moment. After that, I met with the Council of Presidents, and as you will recall from that discussion on May 25th, in general, they supported the mandate. However, many of them expressed the need for flexibility, and there were some who expressed the desire to maintain the provisions. However, after discussing the matter with the human resource directors and having that additional conversation with the presidents, they are fully in support of what I bring to you today, which is a repeal of the code provisions in Chapter 12. With that, I would refer you to the reference material 6A, and I want to make a correction on the record. When you look at the briefing paper under recommendation from the Chancellor's Office, there is an error that I would like to correct on the record. It says that the Chancellor's Office supports the repeal of Title 2, Chapter 12, Section 2. We actually support the repeal of the entire chapter, not just Section 2, so I apologize about that. If we could please clearly note that in the minutes. Now I would like to briefly discuss, now that I put my password back in because I just lost my notes, the resolution. So with that, if I could refer you to reference 6B. It is important to understand that with a resolution, we are not granting additional authority that doesn't already exist. A resolution provides a number of whereas statements, which are essentially statements of fact. It is a way for the board, in this case, to communicate directly with the public. And in this case, if you adopt this resolution, it will be transmitted to the governor's office and to the Board of Health. This body has adopted a number of resolutions over the years, and the last statement of that resolution indicates specific direction for the transmission of this resolution, in which case, again, it will go to the governor's office and the state Board of Health. I will not go over the whereas statements in great detail because I know that you have all already read this. But in general, it kind of goes through the history of where we've been and where authority currently exists, and in those cases where we followed that, and we always followed it. So, for example, it asserts in a whereas statement the constitutional authority of the governor as the chief magistrate and his ability to issue directives. And as you will recall, I believe there were 26 or 27 directives that he issued. And this board and our institutions follow to the T every directive that was applicable to us that was issued by the governor during the pandemic. In addition, there are statements in regards to the State Board of Health and their authority over student immunizations. There was a temporary regulation, as you will all recall, and we complied with that. In addition, it notes where information is available in regards to the current status of the COVID coronavirus. So that includes public information like the Nevada Health Response, the CDC. And finally, it indicates the authority that already exists within the code concerning our presidents and their ability and their authority to establish a safe work environment for students and employees. And there's one other part in here that I want to draw your attention to. And again, this goes to the statement that was made several times by the board on the 25th. And halfway down on page 2, whereas the Board of Regents encourages students, faculty, and staff to comply with health and safety recommendations intended to keep the citizens of Nevada safe and healthy as a matter of public safety. By repealing the provisions of Title 2, Chapter 12, it is in no way to be construed that this board is sending a message that that is not important. To the contrary, when you put these two together, you are sending the exact opposite message. So with that, you will see that there are resolve statements, the first being on the bottom of page 2. It is resolved that it is within the purview of the president of each institution to assess the need for utilization of masks on campus based on guidance from the CDC, the State Board of Health, and local health districts. It is further resolved that each institution president may, based on the aforementioned assessment, based on regional health data, implement one or more campus mask mandates when the president terms that doing so is in the best interest of the health and safety of the institution's students, faculty, and staff. Now, I have received comments on this from the faculty. There is a desire to expand some of the statements in this. I will say that if we do that at this point, we will have to go back and revise it and bring it back to you. However, it is important to understand that what this resolution does is it specifically notes the authority in the case of this situation of a president to issue a mask mandate. However, there is nothing to preclude them from doing more, for example, and they've already done it, which is putting plexiglass in certain places and doing other measures that support a safe environment. So with that, I've stolen his thunder. I think I covered it all, but Jimmy will cover anything that I didn't cover.
Again, for the record, Jimmy Martinez, Interim Chief General Counsel. As normal, Officer in Charge Abba covered everything meticulously. I would just like to call everybody's attention back to the fact that, you know, again, this does not create any new authority. And, you know, this stems from Title I, Article 7, Section 4 that already sets this authority out in the presidents of each institution. And as Crystal said, we have seen them utilize this authority in the past, doing the plexiglass, ventilation systems. And while we reference the masks specifically in this resolution, it doesn't limit it to that. So with that, I'm available for any questions.
And Madam Chair, we are asking that you adopt both. They are not mutually exclusive, so you can adopt one and not the other. However, we see these as a pair, so I would urge you to consider both. Thank you.
Okay. So, will actually depend on the motion that is made, whether they're both included. Are there any questions or comments or a motion to be made now? Regent Geddes. Sorry.
No, thank you for sharing the mic. As I've stated in the last several meetings, I think the mandate is necessary for the safety of faculty, staff, and students. And one of the things I liked when we did the mandate was kind of looking at what the State Board of Health did with the other vaccines that are required for students who are coming up here. And those were really in the State Board of Health regs, not our regs. I think it failed in December at the Legislative Commission, but I think we as a board and as a system need to go back to the State Board of Health and ask them to expand the vaccine requirements, to include COVID or any other thing that pops up. So I think we need to do that for students, faculty, and staff, is expand those mandates. And in looking at it, it was really only for residence hall students at the universities, and it wasn't for all the campuses. And I think we need to go make that ask for all of the campuses on behalf of the system and on behalf of the board for all of the vaccines that are in the state health code. Second, I appreciate what Jimmy and Crystal said, but the language just seems to be really focused on masks and not anything else. And I would like to make it, if we're going to send this to the governor and the legislature, I would like to expand it that really it's any and all health precautions that the president determines necessary based on their county or the state or their community and where those health risks are on COVID or any other disease outbreaks. I talked about monkeypox last time, and I just saw a polio outbreak in the UK last week. And I just want us to be able to respond without it having to come back to the board so the presidents have authority, or presidents in consultation with staff and the chancellor have authority. And I would still like us to develop some level of triggers. I've talked about that several times now, but, you know, if the rate is so high with this mm-hmm. disease or this disease, then we must act, and we don't just wait for it to come to the board for action. So those are my basic comments, and that's, I understand why we want to look at repealing that. I don't think the resolution goes far enough. So I am stuck on it still, as I've mentioned to you, Ms. Abba and Mr. Martinez. I'm just still stuck on how we actually respond to the next one, because we were flat-footed on COVID. We did emergency things. We did emergency actions, masks, plexiglass. We spent, I don't know how many hundreds of thousands of dollars on hand sanitizer. which as a person I don't regret, but it was turned out not to be effective in this case. But I just want us to have criteria where it's not necessarily us having to take an action, but there are State Board of Health, CDC, WHO, there's some criteria that can free up the presidents so that they can take the action for their campus based on what they're seeing. And like in the case of GBC, it could be many different actions through many different counties. So I just don't think this goes far enough.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Please. It is possible in this situation, if we have a relatively easy revision to the resolution that we can read into the record, we can expand certain language. And with that, on the slide, General Counsel Martinez has crafted an additional statement within the whereas statement that appears on the top of page 3 that would essentially broaden that reference to the campus mask mandates. And with your permission, we can go in that direction, just to put that out there as an option.
Okay, so I understand, Mr. Martinez, you're going to read that. The person making the motion seconding it will determine whether they're including that in their motion or not, and then the board will vote accordingly. I'm just trying to clarify so we all are on the same page, correct? Thank you so much.
For the record, Jimmy Martinez. So what we did is, in looking at the second resolved statement, that's the only statement that actually references masks. So what we could do is, in the second line after the word implement, we can strike one or more campus mask mandates, and we can insert appropriate measures to ensure successful institutional operations.
Will you read it one more time? Oh, Regent Geddes has a question first.
Well, the resolved on the bottom of page 2 also references mask mandates. So I want to make sure those two are consistent. Each institution to assess the need for utilization of masks on campus based on guidance from the CDC, State Board of Health, et cetera, and then the second resolved, which you just referenced, or the third resolved, actually. So it's the second and third resolves that both reference masks, not just the third.
So the second and third following, now therefore be it resolved by the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education. That's where we are. I'm just trying to make sure everybody's on the right paragraphs. All right. Please go ahead.
Okay, again, for the record, Jimmy Martinez, thank you for that catch. That's what happens when we try to draft these things on the fly. So in the first resolved statement, then, to make it consistent, what we could do is strike utilization of masks and insert appropriate measures. I think that would make it consistent and make it broad enough to where it suits the board's desires.
Thank you. So if we did that in the second and the third resolved, as you pointed out, I always know to shut up when Crystal's saying something. So
when Crystal speaks, everybody
listens. Yeah, I think they're conferring. Crystal and Jimmy are conferring behind the podium. We're waiting for that.
I'm just going to ask, do we need like a 5-minute break so that you guys can get your thing written, so that we as the board literally know what it is that we're going to be approving or not approving?
For the record, Jimmy Martinez, I think that would be helpful so that we can clean this up.
Okay, I'm calling a 5-minute break. We will come back at 2:05 sharp. Thank you. All right, Officer in Charge Abba, please.
Thank you. For the record, Crystal Abba, Officer in Charge. So thank you, Madam Chair, first of all, for the brief break. I'd like to take a moment and just take a step back and explain the authority that currently exists and essentially what this resolution does and what it means specifically for the individuals who will be making those decisions, which are the presidents. So right now in the Board of Regents handbook, there is a clear statement in regards to the role and responsibility of the president in ensuring a safe environment for students, faculty, and staff. This resolution asserts that. It calls out the specific example of the mask mandate because as we developed that, we felt that that was an appropriate middle ground. However, hearing from Regent Geddes and also hearing from the faculty, it is important to understand that there are many circumstances that we can't anticipate. But in addition to that, that absent this resolution, so even if you don't approve this resolution today, there is nothing to preclude an institution from putting in place safety measures that are not specifically articulated here. It is expected, however, in the way the resolution is crafted, that when you make that decision, you're going to base that decision on the data of the CDC or the health response. So, for example, what might not happen is if you have faculty coming to you and saying, well, we all want to work remotely. Okay, well, has there been an uptick in the COVID data that would reflect a situation where that is justified? That is the situation that will face the president. And under this and under current board policy, it is fully at their discretion to make that decision. So I would like to say that this puts them in the driver's seat, but they've been in the driver's seat all along. So with that, Madam Chair, I will ask General Counsel Martinez to reread the resolved statement as we propose additional language to that. So we're reading it into the record officially so that if someone wants to include that in their motion, they may simply indicate as read by Chief Counsel Martinez. And we will be revising, for the sake of clarity, the resolved statement that appears on the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3 in reference 6B.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
For the record, Interim Chief General Counsel Jimmy Martinez. So the changes that we are recommending is in the first resolved statement, striking the words utilization of masks and inserting in its place the terms appropriate measures. And then in the next resolve statement, striking the language one or more campus mask mandates and inserting the language appropriate measures to ensure successful institutional operations. Now, in addition to that, what I would like to clarify is that, you know, as we know today, there are no mask mandates or vaccine requirements in place within our state. Of course, in the event that the State Board of Health and, you know, the governor's office, there's any directives, everybody would have to comply with those. So it's in absence of those types of directives that the presidents have this type of authority. And with that, I'm happy to answer any additional questions.
Thank you both for that. Now I will...
Madam Chair?
Yes, Regent Boylan, please.
Thank you so much. Council Martinez, I appreciate your knowledge and wisdom, I should say. You're wiser than you look, okay. And I appreciate your last bit of advice. So I'm just a wee bit lost, maybe. But these are resolutions, right? These are not mandates or laws or anything like that. These are resolutions. There's a bit of a difference, right? No. Am I wrong about that?
For the record, Interim Chief General Counsel Jimmy Martinez, that's correct. This is a resolution for the board to express its position. It does not create any new authority. It's just reciting its position and the current authority that's currently rests with the president's pursuant to Title 1, Article 7, Section 4 of the NC handbook.
Outstanding. Thank you so much, sir, because I just I'm so against mandates and everything else, but when it comes to resolution, oh, I feel a little cozy and I feel better. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Regent Boylan. Regent Brooks, do I see you trying to ask a question?
Yeah, you do, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. For the record, Regent Brooks. You know, I just have a question, Ms. Martinez. In terms of, first, I guess I would say that anything that needs to be done to repeal the outdated policy that we currently have, I'm in favor of. I do have a question, though, in terms of the resolution. Why, just out of curiosity, why would an institution provide more guidance or mandate than the state itself requires? It seems to me why I think it's very important that our university presidents have the authority to implement best practice measures for their campus. On something like this, where we're talking about virus or disease control, again, I'm just wondering, why would there be more at a given campus than there would be in the state of Nevada?
For the record, Jimmy Martinez, I think the answer is not quite settled today. Our response to COVID-19 was kind of groundbreaking for all of us. And, you know, a few years ago, this wouldn't have been a question that we'd be asking ourselves, you know, how we go about this. But I think it is important where we stand today to acknowledge, given what we know, that certain things could happen on a campus that could require a president to use their authority under Title I to ensure a safe and successful campus operation. You know, one example that comes to mind is an outbreak in a dorm. Of course, the governor's office isn't going to issue a directive on something like that. That's more of a local issue. And that's why I say that if there's a directive, obviously, this is, none of it really matters because we have to comply with the directive anyway. But this is more geared towards smaller things that happen on institutions that the institutional president needs to respond to. I hope that answers your question.
Regent Brooks, for the record, it does. Thank you.
Okay. I have some regents in the queue. Regent DeBrava, you are next. After Regent DeBrava, I have Regent Moran. Then I had Regent Brooks, but maybe you've already answered your question, and Regent Carvalho. So we will go in that order. Regent DeBrava first, please. Thank you. Regent DeBrava, if you're speaking, we're not able to hear you.
Oh, I'm sorry, I was on mute. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Sorry about that. I just wanted to say thank you to Officer in Charge Abba and the Council of Presidents and Council Martinez for all the work that they've put on this. To me, it's really pretty ambiguous of who's going to make the call when it has to be made. I am a physician. I believe in the vaccines. I'm going to have to just stay with my original position that we keep the vaccine mandate. Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you. Regent Moran?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, Regent Moran for the record. Just a couple of thoughts, and again, I appreciate the acting officer in charge and obviously Mr. Martinez's work on this, good work on this, and providing the information to us. And I am glad that we got to the point of clarification in terms of just reiterating what the presidents of our institutions already have the authority and the discretion to do. I think that's very, very important because I think this is the problem. I started off 6 years ago saying the same thing, which was we need to hire very well-qualified folks to serve as our chief executive officers. And in this case, it would be our presidents. And we have several of them, I believe eight, to be able to come to a meeting and discuss on the record this particular item. and avoid it becoming a political issue as opposed to a public safety issue, which I think we all have in our quiver, so to speak. We all want to see the best in public safety. I think that we need to continue to follow our bylaws and our rules and regulations, number one. But number two, we need to get out of the way from our presidents making good and reasonably informed decisions. And so I'm glad to hear Mr. Martinez and our acting officer in charge state that this is a reiteration of what the presidents already have the authority to do and will do, because on in different times and in different places and in different areas geographically, we could have a different situation arising. And we need to be able to allow the folks that we are instilling as our captains of these ships to be able to move quickly and swiftly and do what they think is best, because they quite frankly have their fingers on the pulse, whether it be on campus, whether it be statewide, whether it be in the academic ecosystem. So I will reiterate, Madam Chair, I am glad that we are looking closely at this particular issue, because it's very important and it does involve public safety, and public safety is important to all of us. But I also want to remind everybody on this commission and all of our colleagues and also the public that it is absolutely essential that we allow our presidents to do what they need to do to execute their strategic planning and their strategic missions. We need to stop meddling in their affairs. We need to stop getting involved in the things that we don't need to be involved in. We need to let them do our jobs. And then when the opportune time comes for review, we act just like any other board would act, whether it's a public board, it's a private board, it's a closely held board, it's a two-member board. It really doesn't matter. It's all the same. We hire the best. We let them do their job. We review. We look at checks and balances on a yearly, annual, semi-annual basis, quarterly, whatever the bylaws call for. But I am absolutely in favor of allowing the presidents to do what they need to do, what our bylaws already allow them to do. And I'm in support of the recommendations made by our acting officer in charge and general counsel. With that, Madam Chair, I will wrap.
Thank you. And Regent Moran, I know I've asked you before, when you make a recommendation, are you making a motion or are you just telling us that's what you recommend? So if you're making a motion, would you mind making clear whether your motion includes the original document or the resolved document that our General Counsel Martinez read into the record? Whoever's going to make the motion.
No. I'm not making a motion, Madam Chair. Again, okay. Regent Moran, for the record, I just wanted to reiterate my position with regards to presidential authority, discretion, and them being allowed to do their job after we have retained them to do that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Okay, and Regent Brooks, I believe you may have asked your questions already, or do you have other questions?
Hey, Regent Brooks, for the record, no, my questions were answered. Thank you.
Thank you. Regent Carvalho?
Thank you, Chair McAdoo. First, I'd like to say that I think that the specific part of Title II, Chapter 12 that was implemented at the time was the right thing to do at that time. I think at this point, it's difficult to continue to enforce that, given the fact that so much has changed since the time that we did that. So I am in favor of repealing that part of our code at this time. I apologize if this seems like wordsmithing, and I'm not trying to do that, but I want to be as clear as possible with regard to this resolution. Regarding the last resolved statement on page 2, I just would like to add with in terms of who the guidance is that we are asking for. I think especially since this is going to the governor's office, that we include the governor in those entities whose guidance we are trying to follow. So I would just like to add that as well, and you know, add the Office of the Governor as well as the CDC, State Board of Health, and local health districts. I do think that that's appropriate, especially given I believe at the time that that the governor mandated the mask mandate. I guess with guidance from the CDC, but that was his mandate at the time. So just a small addition to that, if that's possible. Thank you.
Second. Thank you, Regent Carballo. Mr. Martinez has a comment.
Again, for the record, Jimmy Martinez. The reason why we didn't include the governor's office in this is because we wanted to make very clear that the presidents do not have, they should not be making these types of decisions on the whim or based on personal sentiment. These decisions need to be made on the recommendations of the subject matter experts. And the subject matter experts being the CDC, the State Board of Health, and the local health districts. The reason why we didn't include the governor's office in there is because the governor's office would issue directives. And once the governor's office issues the directive, this is moot. Because we're all required to follow the governor's directive, and any of the president's decisions that don't rise to that level have been overridden by the directive at that point. So that's why I think it's important to leave the governor's directives off of this to keep a clear hierarchy, and also to point out that, you know, that's why the language is in there that says it's based on the guidance from, because we want to be very clear that these types of decisions have to be based on the guidance of the subject matter experts. We are not trying to declare that, you know, the presidents are subject matter experts in the medical field.
Thank you for that explanation. Regent Arascata, did you have a question?
Yes.
Please.
Thank you very much, Chair. Does this resolution provide the campus presidents to unilaterally require their faculty that are dedicated for on-campus education when the class is not listed as an online option? What I'm saying is, if the class is specific to being taught on campus, does this provide the presidents to require faculty to not arbitrarily decide, I'm going to do this online, this is my decision, I'm not going to do it in class, I want this class to be online, even though I'm dedicated to be on campus, I'm going to teach it online. Does this provide the president's authorization to require that faculty who are on campus faculty to teach the camp after recommendations from CDC and all the other health provisions, that they can require their faculty to remain on campus for education?
For the record, Jimmy Martinez. First, I'll just, when it says, does this provide the authorization, I just want to reiterate, this doesn't provide additional authorization. We're just pointing out what it already, the authority that already exists. But to answer the question, I really think that would be a question for each individual campus given the situation, because as you stated, in that situation, instead of a mask mandate applying to specific faculty, one remedy that the institution president may want to look at is putting the class online. So I don't think it's as easy as just saying, you know, this is the authority that you have under this. Every situation is going to be looked at independently, given the facts and applying this specific authority to that situation with the help of course, the institution general counsels.
Can that decision to go online, regardless if they're designated for on-campus learning, be autonomously done by the faculty member? Can they just say, I don't believe in this, I'm teaching online? Or is that up to the presidents up to their discretion?
You know, I couldn't answer that question across the board for every campus. I couldn't answer the academic question.
Okay.
So in general, I think, Regent Arascata, the answer is no. I mean, so if a course has been designated as online, a president midterm, absent a situation that merits that, they can't simply say, you've got to move that course on campus or online. So, no.
Thank you.
Hey, Regent Carballo, I have you in the queue.
Thank you, Chair McAdoo. I'm sorry about this. I just feel that that resolved statement becomes a little less clear when we take out utilization of masks. And I like the new verbiage for appropriate measures, but maybe can we add appropriate health and safety measures? So add the words health and safety in between appropriate and measures, or is that, again, an issue for you? Thank you.
For the record, Interim Chief General Counsel Jimmy Martinez, now we start getting into the technicalities and into the weeds of it, because really these types of decisions aren't health and safety decisions. They are decisions by the president that affect the successful institution operations. Now, health and safety does play into that, but it's not strict health and safety determinations. It has to be a health and safety determination based on the subject matter experts listed that affects the operations of the campus. So it's a little more complicated than that. I would say that if we need to come up with new language, then we'd probably have to look at that a little bit more to try to figure out exactly how to capture that. But I understand the question, and I do think it's already addressed. I just think it's, when we get into the weeds, it's a little more of a process than I think is appropriate for doing it during a public meeting, I think.
Okay. I'm sorry, Chair McAdoo, may I respond?
Oh, please go ahead.
Thank you. Well, Mr. Martinez, you are our attorney, and I respect your advice, and so I will follow that advice. Thank you.
Okay, I have no other regents in the queue, and this is an action. Oh, I'm so sorry, Regent McMichael, I didn't see you.
Yes.
Your hand. Please go ahead.
I would like to make a motion to accept the new language to the revision and a motion to approve.
And do I have a second? I want to clarify that that's the language that Mr. Martinez read into the record. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. I'm sorry, Mr. Martinez.
For the record, Jimmy Martinez, I just also want to clarify, is the motion to approve the repeal of Chapter 12 and adoption of the resolution, or is it just for the resolution?
Oh. Please, yes, let both. Us know, Mr. Jimmy Michael, for both. Okay.
For both.
All right. And do I have a second to that motion?
Regent Brooks, I'll second the motion.
Okay. We have a motion and a second. I think we've had a tremendous amount of discussion on that, so I'm going to call for the vote. And Carrie, I would like for that to be a roll call vote, please.
Regent Dubrava?
No.
Regent Geddes?
No.
Chair McAdoo?
Yes.
Regent McMichael?
Yes.
Regent Moran? Regent Moran, we can't hear your vote. Madam Chair, I'll circle back to Regent Moran. Regent Perkins?
Aye.
Regent Tarkanian?
Nay.
Regent Arascada?
Yes.
Regent Boylan?
Aye.
Regent Brooks?
Yes.
Vice Chair Carter?
Yes.
Regent Carballo?
Aye.
Regent Del Carlo? Regent Moran? The motion passes.
Thank you, Carrie. All right. And thank you, Officer in Charge Abba and Mr. Martinez, and to my fellow regents for the robust discussion. I appreciate it. And we will now move to agenda item number 7. And I will be doing that here from my mic. So in regard to new business responses, I have brought forth agenda item 7 for the board to consider establishing an ad hoc committee to review the roles and responsibilities of the chancellor and establish its charge. And so that is actually the action item before us. But in full transparency, I want to clarify that we will be voting on whether or not we're going to have an ad hoc committee to do that. And then I want to make it very clear per, let me get that, hold on 1 second. Per Title 1, Article 6, Section 4, that should that ad hoc committee be approved today, then the board chair appoints the committee members. So I just want that to be said before we discuss or approve that or not.
Madam Chair.
And if there's... Yes, Regent Boylan.
Thank you, ma'am. I'd like to make a motion to approve that we do have that subcommittee or committee, and I think it's something that we need. So, in my opinion, yes, I'd like to make that motion. Thank you so much.
Thank you for the motion. Do I have a second?
Yes, ma'am.
Regent McMichael, second.
Oh, I had a second from Regent Geddes. So I have a motion and a second. Are there any questions or discussion? Regent Geddes?
I just want to say that I think it is a very good time for us to review this. We haven't reviewed these charges in a very long time. Luckily, we have Dale starting tomorrow and Crystal leaving tonight. She's leaving the OIC. But I think we're in very good hands for the next 18 months. But before we start a search, I think it would be great to review these roles and responsibilities because it has been a long time, and I fully support the motion from Regent Boylan.
Thank you for that. Are there any other comments or questions?
Regent Perkins here, Madam Chair, if I may.
Yes, Regent Perkins.
That was exactly my question. So Regent Geddes kind of stole my thunder. I was going to ask when was the last time this was evaluated, and it'd probably be a great time to do it.
Thank you. I see no more comments. I'm going to take a voice vote on this. All those in favor say aye.
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 I vote aye as well. Any opposed, please say nay or no. The motion passes unanimously. And before we move to new business, since I'm not the public, I do want to make a comment about Regent Geddes' comments. And that is, today will officially be Officer in Charge Abba's last meeting serving as our chancellor. And I cannot help but tell you, I think she has done an incredible job. It's not surprising to us. I mean, she's been doing an incredible job for NSHE more than 20 years. But I can't thank you enough for all that you've done for us and that you will continue to do for us. And with that being said, I'm very excited also to welcome Mr. Urquiaga as our, although I can't see him back there, as our acting chancellor starting, I guess, at 12:01 tomorrow. I'm pretty sure Crystal will go for that. Anyway, I welcome you to that, and I believe that Crystal and the cabinet team and really every single NSHE employee will be at service to you in your new calling, and it's a very exciting time for us as NSHE. And then I would most certainly be remiss to not thank Regent Carter well, Vice Chair Carter, you're still that today, for serving alongside me. It has indeed been my pleasure and honestly joy to work with you as the Vice Chair. You've brought gifts to my life that I didn't have. You've brought skill sets that I didn't have, and I believe together we made a great team as Chair and Vice Chair. I'm honored to get to continue to serve as your chair, and more importantly to me than that title is as your public servant to every single one of our employees and she and my fellow regents. So along that same line, I want to welcome today Regent Carvalho and tomorrow Vice Chair Carvalho to my team as Chair and Vice Chair. I know that we too will accomplish amazing work together in these next 6 months with the other 11 regents serving alongside us. I'm just privileged, honored, and feel extremely blessed for the opportunity to serve. So again, I say thank you, and now we will move on to new business. Regent Geddes, you have new business.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And yeah, just kind of relating back to the vaccine issue, several months ago we talked about the General Counsel investigating our constitutional authority, where last year we deferred to the State Board of Health and their authority to determine vaccine mandates for students on campus, but we started investigating what constitutional authority we had as a board for the vaccines. As I mentioned earlier, they're really only for the residence halls at the two universities per the law, and I would just like General Counsel to look at how far we could go with that, because I would really like to see vaccine mandates that we have for residence hall students deployed to all students who are present on our campuses. So I'd like to see that as a new business.
Okay, we've got that on the record. I have next in the queue, Vice Chair Carter for a new business.
Yes. So there is a policy that established a salary study. That policy needs a little bit of revision. In its current form, it doesn't come back to the board, and the recommendation has to only be signed off by the chancellor. It's going to increase the salaries or expenses across the system by over $1 million. Policy also contemplated a six-month window between the completion and the implementation, which was not followed. As a region, I had about 8 days to see that policy. As a general person in the public, I think they've had no days. That salary gets implemented tomorrow. So I think that's my first item that needs to be at a meeting. Second, the board needs to revise a lot of the policies that allow the chancellor and chair to operate in a vacuum to make decisions. It's always been a problem since I've been on the board, and it's just a matter of changing some policies. But one of the things that's come up a few different times is the idea of an executive committee. I think we need to look at what that could entail, what that would look like, where the legality lays as far as having something like an executive committee. And in absence of that, maybe changing everywhere in the policy outside of the chair approving the agenda and running the meetings, maybe it's chair and vice chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Carter. Let's see, I have other names here. Regent Moran, have you listed for new business?
Oh, yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the time. I had just two items for consideration. One, of course, we had talked a little bit about regent reviews, both peer-related and community-based related, and also colleague-based related reviews. And we had talked about that on a prior agenda, I want to say, going back several or maybe a couple, maybe 2 months ago. And no further dialogue on that, but perhaps we can revisit that at some point in time. The secondary item, as far as new business is concerned, is I really enjoy the fact that you have put together this interim ad hoc committee to really revisit and drill down on the rights, responsibilities, obligations of the chancellor. And considering we've had out, we now have an outgoing acting officer in charge serving as our chancellor, who, by the way, you know, I wanted to take a moment just to say thanks to Crystal Abba for stepping up at a time that was absolutely important, of paramount importance to the system, but also to the state and everyone that lives in it and visits it. So I, again, I appreciate her stepping up and not just filling the role, but exceeding in that role. And really just, again, 24/7, 365. I don't know how you have the time to do that, but I appreciate it nevertheless. But I think that to that point, Madam Chair, is in the same stroke of creating really the roles and responsibilities of our next chancellor, whether acting, interim, permanent, I think that we should also take a look at perhaps creating an ad hoc committee to visit the roles, responsibilities, and obligations of board membership. And I think that that is something that we should take a look at as well. I think it's always a good time for a refresher course or some sort of continued education as it relates to any of our positions, whether it be our institution presidents or it be our membership on the board. But taking the time to review that and understanding that, I think will really, really be good forward-looking in being able to get to consensus, but also having the tools to utilize to get to being able to do the job and doing the job on an A-plus basis. So with that, Madam Chair, two things to consider. Again, regent reviews, and then perhaps a regent refresher, again, specifically with regards to roles, responsibilities, very similar to the ad hoc committee that we just saw in our prior agendized item. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for that. I do want to mention that we do have the board review will be completed before December 31st, just as a point of information, but I appreciate both of those items. And next in the queue is Regent Carvalho. Please, thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, don't forget me. Sorry, ma'am. But
I haven't forgotten you. I have you, then I have Regent Arascada. I mean, I have Regent Carvalho, Regent Arascada, and then you. I have a list.
Oh,
I
thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, though.
Thank you, ma'am. Sorry, Regent Carvalho. Thank you.
No problem. I have two items for new business. The first is related to agenda item for the codification of the NG Business Officers Council. I did speak with CFO Klinger about this, but it was too late to add it to the agenda. We just had a brief discussion about it, but I think it would be beneficial to strengthen the relationship and the ties between the Business Officers Council and the Business Finance and Facilities Committee. And so I would like to add that as new business to potentially put on their charter, and also to revise the charge of the BFF committee to include that and possibly other areas that we can either expand or contract the charter of that committee. The second item of new business that I believe has come up before, but I think it's something that I'd like to bring up again, is to direct staff to review the code regarding purchasing specific to contracts. I would like to see some sort of minimum dollar amount or time of contract that would come before the board. We have that for real estate, but we don't have that currently for contracts for service and things of that nature. So I would like to ask for that to be a new business. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Carvalho. Regent Arascada, please.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. To echo the sentiments of Regent Carter in the South, I too would like to request a new business item to review the provisions of Title II, Chapter 5, Section 5.5.1, which is the periodic four-year review of the NSHE salary schedules, in particular to review the process that is currently in place for evaluating salary schedules for use for hiring purposes to ensure they are market competitive. Thank you much.
Thank you very much. Regent Boylan.
Oh, thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
I wrote down these things like you advised me right from the beginning, and I'm going to try always doing that. Otherwise, I'm going to mess up. So here I am. For new business, Madam Chair, before I make the request, I can hardly read my own writing here. It's terrible. I would, with your permission, like to thank all applicants for our general counsel position. But I'm disappointed at how few people applied for this position, which is one of the highest paid government positions in Nevada. And from what the board has been through legally in the last year, one of the most important positions for the board. I would also like to thank all the subcommittee members who spent previous and precious time sitting. I'm saying previous, that was precious. Precious time on this matter, my writing. And just to go ahead and say, I thank subcommittee chair Moran for his eloquence as usual at the board meeting yesterday and making it very easy for us to feel comfortable there and for his patience. Let me go on. All the subcommittee members, right. Madam Chair, I would like to request that the board, through Council Martinez, and what I meant earlier, Mr. Martinez, was that you are a wise guy, but you're so young, you know, just, I think, slightly older than my son. But yes, I'd like to request Council Martinez put together a plan to investigate the entire process of the hiring of our new council, whether he takes it upon himself, decides to get outside counsel or investigators. I hate spending any money, and I don't think we need to. But I would also be remiss if I did not congratulate our new counsel. And I think he's very qualified, and we have mining and the Navy in common. I was in the Persian Gulf on the USS Terror for a while. Grand time, wartime, nice fun. But anyway, I was not in the Navy, but I was there. I'd also, if you don't mind, make this for the record, and I'd like some feedback as soon as possible about my new business request, not something that just lingers on and goes away and we don't hear about it. So please, Madam Chair, you know, I appreciate your patience, and if you would just give me one more minute, I'd like to thank OIC, ABBA, when I first came on board and I heard her name and saw it, and I'm like, wow, what a neat name. It's like a band from long ago, from Europe, because I'm involved. I know someone in the band. Anyway, and I'd like to thank Mr. Carter, Regent Carter, who was the first of the regents to reach out to me, and his advice on things has been precious and really welcome, and I thank him for his work with you. Thank you so much for your patience, ma'am, and all present. I really appreciate this, but please, I would really like my new business to be taken into consideration and a follow-up soon. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank Thank you. I will make note that we have been getting new business items checked off the list. Thank you to Officer in Charge ABBA. And I expect that we will be doing the same with Mr. Urquiaga. But I appreciate your point, and we will fit it in as soon as we can. It takes a little Thank time so to much. Do these things. Thank you, Regent Boylan.
Well, I'm sure. Thank you so much.
I don't see any other new business. Am I missing any, Carrie, in the queue or in Las Vegas? If not, we're going to move to agenda item number 9, and that's public comment. Is there any public comment in Elko?
There is no public comment in Elko.
Thank you. Is there any public comment in Las Vegas? Carrie, do you have any public comment in Las Vegas?
My apologies. No public comment, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Is there any public comment here in Reno? Seeing no public comment, I will adjourn the meeting. Thank you for your participation and attendance today.
Thank you.